We're back with the First American Dream Podcast episode of 2024. I am your host, Elias Torres, and today I interview Eric Cardenas, co-founder and CEO of Socalo Health. Eric's doing some pretty remarkable work in the health space right now, but I'll let him speak for himself. Let's get right into it. Give us a little background, Eric. Who are you? What are you doing?
Yeah, well, appreciate it, Elias. Thanks so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to catch up with you. I know that we got to connect at the beginning of our entrepreneurial journey here with Socalo Health, and so really appreciate the opportunity. So to talk to you a little bit about who I am, right? So I think I'll start off by just telling you that I'm the proud son of immigrant Mexican parents. They moved from Monterrey, outside of Monterrey, to Houston in the late 60s. I'm the youngest of three. We grew up in Houston, in inner city Houston. It was, back in the day, probably not a very desirable neighborhood to grow up in. Today, I think we're seeing a lot of gentrification, so it's definitely changed. I was just there in December, and it has changed a lot in the last few decades. But I grew up in a predominantly Latino neighborhood. This was definitely an influence in what I'm doing today. But growing up, I was the youngest of three, so I was the baby. And so if you were to talk to my brother and my sister, they'd probably say I was a little spoiled. We had a tight-knit family, man. It was great. We got to really see my parents, who instilled a really strong work ethic in us. And, growing up, I try to stay out of trouble as much as I could. Definitely grew up inner city, where there was a lot of gangs, a lot of stuff that just wasn't, what you want to put your kids through today, right? But I think it shaped who I was. I really was consumed by sports. I was really trying to be a good student. I was the first in my family to get into a major university, but I was also the first to get kicked out. So that was an interesting point. But basically grew up, trying to really, really focus on just kind of getting out of the hood a little bit. And I just have to say, it was definitely an experience that has molded me, has shaped me. And I think if it wasn't for my parents and the strong work ethic that they had, I don't know that I'd be doing things that I'm doing here today. So in a nutshell, that's who I am. Proud son of immigrant parents who just taught me how to really bust my tail.
Yeah, I always like put my foot in my mouth. You're like, you're a proud son of immigrants coming from the hood.
Yeah, basically.
I love it.
I
think that, it says that our destinies are defined by the zip codes in which we were born. And we're defined that the stats are there. You can't argue them. But I think I was talking to somebody last night, and they were saying that they felt like I escaped the matrix, and the matrix says, this is the zip code. This is who you are. And this, if you're in the zip code, you're in the hood. If you're in this other zip code, you're going to become a VC and you're going to become an entrepreneur and you're going to have all of this. But I escaped it. Right. And now I can look at it from the outside of the matrix. So I think you've done that too. We're breaking the mold. We're the glitches.
And, that's right.
The anomalies. And I think what we're trying to say is that we want to inspire more, right? To do the same, right? Because anomalies are happening more often than we think, right? And we think it's not possible. So wait, what about you? Got kicked out of a college. You have degrees there. You look like a doctor in the back. It's not a PhD. Yeah. Not a doctor in this physical doctor.
No. I wish I could tell you that, but my story is a little different. I grew up going to a big school, a big high school in not too far from downtown Houston, and I did really well. I played sports, which I think played a huge role in kind of keeping me out of trouble. I took AP classes, thinking like, hey man, I'm doing great. And so when it rolled around time to start applying for colleges, I graduated, top of my class. I was one of the, I was like number 32 out of 500 students that graduated. And so I started to apply to colleges, and I got into a major university. I got into Texas A&M. And I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be a pediatrician. I wanted to help people. You know, one of the things I learned early on was like pick a career that never goes out of style and that never kind of goes out of demand. And I was like, well, there's always going to be sick people. So I wanted to take that path. And so when I, you know, enrolled and, you know, got accepted into this university, I didn't really quite understand the process. And you know, me and my wife, who are high school sweethearts, you know, we had very different experiences getting into major universities. I, you know, just as an example, my parents didn't take me to new student orientation. Like, they were like, where are you going? Why? Like, what do you need? Here's $50. Good luck. And they were very supportive, but they didn't know. Like, they didn't take my brother or my sister to orientation. They didn't know how to lease an apartment for me or anything. We didn't even get in for room and board or anything in time. So I had to like rent an apartment off campus. And I thought it was great. I thought I was going to figure this out and just make it happen. And so I was a biomedical science major, and I showed up to my first few classes, and one of the classes was a chemistry class. And while I aced chemistry in high school, I realized it just wasn't the same. Like, growing up in the hood, again, compared to taking a chemistry class at Texas A&M University, I walked into this auditorium. There's like 500 students in this class. You know, they started to talk about class, and I was like, hey, when are they going to hand out the chart of elements? They're like, nah, bro, like, you should have that memorized, figured out already. And I was like, all right, cool. How do I drop this class? And I just realized that I wasn't really prepared for school. And so a couple things happened. You know, we had a death in the family that also impacted, you know, how I was doing in school. And, you know, the first year of school, just that was done. I got a letter from Texas A&M said, thank you for trying. You know, if you make it to grad school, you can come back. And that was the end of my journey. I tell you about my wife, like, in comparison, you know, she went to UT in Austin, and there was a program specifically for students coming in from inner city schools. And so she had smaller class sizes. They made sure that she was taking classes that were, you know, just to ease into the university lifestyle, right? The things that you needed to be prepared for as a student. And she went on to graduate from UT. And so very different experiences. One that was built to support students like us, and another one where you're kind of just on your own.
Yeah, yeah.
And I realized that, like, you know, it wasn't the same. So I wasn't really set up for success, and a major learning opportunity for sure. And you know, what you see back here now is I ended up getting my undergrad as an adult. I was working at Amazon when I was able to finish and graduate from the University of Incarnate Word in San Antonio.
This is so inspiring, right? In so many angles, especially you and your wife, both of you, like a case study right next to each other, right? Of anomalies that took different routes. But it's like, you needed extra help, and you acknowledge that you needed a little bit of extra prep because we didn't have it, right? And you failed the first time, but then you did it again. And then she was able to take advantage of some of the programs, not a lot, but just a little bit of help, just a little bit of assistance or extra care or support. Like, it, to me, it was, I had a Latino scholarship at the university. And that was a little, even though it's like a predominantly Latino school in Florida, USF, there was a little community. I felt I was part of this Latino community scholars. And, yeah. And this woman, Donna Perino, we're going to help you graduate. We are here for you. You're going to get this done. Just little encouragement like that compared to like we go by ourselves to college. I'm kind of like I'm still like a Latino dad. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
My kids apply to school and I'm like, don't bother me. You got to figure out yourself. Because I don't want to spoil them either. So it's just a Latino thing. Whether we know or we don't know, I don't want to spoil. And I'm just like, call me if you get accepted. And so like I got two in college now. So it's one accepted, one in third year. And I did not do much for them. I was like, if you don't hustle like I did.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's a testament though. Like they're there now. And while maybe you didn't help them with the tactical things up front, it's what you did when they were little, right? It's what you did when that And I guarantee you, man, like, I know it's different. Like right now, sometimes I struggle. I got three kids, you know, they're a lot younger, you know, but I realize like at times that I'm very fortunate. So I live in Seattle now, right? And my kids go to a private Montessori school, and
jeez,
I didn't know what that was. I didn't know what that was growing up, right? Like, and it took me a while to like realize, like, man, like this is something that I think is going to help them,
bro.
That's be in the same situation that I was in, right? You know, we're in a position now though, like at the age, like my daughter, she's in middle school now, and I was just thinking, I was telling my wife, like the things that I was exposed to at that age, like she will never be exposed to, and it's just in one part, I'm like really happy about that, but then other parts I'm like, man, but like are they gonna still be as gritty as we were or not? And
I was watching Walter Isaacson be an interview by Lex Fridman, right? You know, I'm aspiring to be a great podcaster, and Walter's just saying like Elam got some problems, you know. And it's like, but Walter goes, look, I've interviewed all these amazing people, and I'll tell you something, is like all these people had major issues growing up, you know, and that's where the grit comes. And so I was telling my kids, geez, I'm not hard. I haven't been hard enough on you, you know. I'm like, and so it only inspired me to be harder. I yell at my kids more every day I can. They were like, I go, you didn't take the trash out this Sunday. And they're like, why didn't you tell us? Because it's not my job to tell you. Like, we'll look up the town website. They're like, well, how do we know when the trash comes? How do you know when it's recycling? I'm like, well, use your phone. Put an alarm. Not my problem, dude. Yeah. You know, that's how I talk to my kids. You wanted to be a doctor, but so when did you become interested in health? Before you wanted to become a doctor or after Amazon?
Yeah, so I wanted to go in, you know, I wanted to be a doctor. When that didn't work out, you know, I went back home, went back to Houston, and I needed a job. And so I was very, I guess, you know, fortunate that I had a family member who got me a very entry-level job at a clinic in Houston. And that's what really kind of kicked off my career in healthcare. I literally spent the first 10 years of my 22-year career in healthcare now climbing the corporate ladder. And I literally started working in the front desk at night at a clinic in Southwest Houston. You know, it turned out that I was really good at computers at the time. And my boss was like, hey, there's this new technology that we're going to implement to make all of our health records, you know, digital. Do you want to be a part of that? And that's how I started taking more of an IT approach to my career. And so I ended up taking a role there. That's what ended up being like the first access, like exposure to like electronic health records, which was really big. That's obviously telling you how old I am. But ended up spending the first 10 years of my career just climbing the corporate ladder. I left a major health system around 2012, 2013 as a director of information systems. And I have to say that whole time while I was doing that, I always had it in the back of my mind that, man, one day they're going to ask me, hey, did you get a degree? And that they were going to fire me. That the moment that they would ask me that, they're going to be like, hey, well, we thought you did. So never mind, give us our money back or like give us the title back. And so that was always something that was kind of lingering in the back of my mind. Because I had tried going back to school, but it was like work or something. And, you know, it was just very difficult for me to really, you know, concentrate on that. But, that's what got me into healthcare. And then after the first 10 years of just climbing the corporate ladder, working for these large health systems, I decided that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. That's when I started to think I got my hands on like Lean Startup when it first came out. And I was like, man, maybe I need to figure out how to do something different in healthcare. And I started talking to some folks. I had some really good supportive leadership at the time. And I, as crazy as it sounds, like, I just said, screw it, I'm leaving and I'm going to go start a company. I uprooted my family. We're living in San Antonio, Texas at the time. We went and started a company and we got into an accelerator, which moved us to South Carolina for a summer. So there we are with, you know, two little kids in tow and, made every mistake in the book with that first company, but learned a lot. I think that's where you learn your, you know, the best lessons is in making some serious mistakes. Ended up shutting that down and then, you know, got back to Texas and tried again with another company. I wasn't the founder, but I was an early employee at a company that went on to be really successful. Again, learned a lot through that experience, and just, you know, after a string of experiences, I ended up getting a call from Amazon in 2018. They were recruiting me for a confidential healthcare project. They wouldn't tell me what it was. I remember I didn't really even know how hard it was to interview at Amazon. I just showed up, went through a day's worth of interviews, talked about my experience and everything. And sure enough, they offered me a job. So in 2018, relocated the family up to Seattle. Turns out I was hired to be part of the founding team at Amazon Care, which was one of their first big healthcare initiatives. Learned all about the Amazon way, which was great. But the thing too, to keep in mind, is that I was the only Latino in the room, you know. So me and Marissa, my co-founder at Socalo Health, are now the only two Latinos in the room. And you know, we talked about like growing up in the hood, man. Like this whole time, there's just nothing but code switching, right? I can't be the Eric who I am. I had to be the professional Eric and try to like really fit in and do what kind of was expected. And it was a great experience. Did that for a few years. The pandemic started here in Seattle, and I got to co-lead the COVID response at Amazon. And that's really kind of what capped off, you know, what I consider a really successful career in healthcare. And it was while I was at Amazon that I was a full-time student and was able to go ahead and knock out that undergrad at Incarnate Word.
Yeah, no, it's. I think that those are the kinds of things we want to talk about for people to hear and to share, right? And to challenge the status quo. I don't really know. It's tough. It's tough for me to say what's the value of you having gotten that degree or not. You know, it's a personal decision, yeah. Right? It's like the question is, it's like, but what is it based? It's based on old history, right? Or things that we were influenced, but is it really going to influence who you are and who you're going to become, right? For us, it's different, I think. I went to Harvard when I was at IBM. You know, I wanted to get a master's in computer science. I always was this imposter syndrome that like, I don't code like the great CS students because I study like business information systems. But my strength is not really about coding. My strength is the Latino immigrant growing up with nothing in communist countries, hood-like situations that allows me to be where I am today. It wasn't Harvard. Harvard did not make me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's why we want to share those details to people. So people are like, they could use that time to build a company, you know, taking that or if that's what they want to do, that's what they want to do. I respect it.
Yeah. I want to tell you a quick story, Elias, about how this all kind of came to light. So while I was at Amazon, you know, building this project, this was like huge, like project, right? High profile. People were wondering what we're doing in healthcare. I was a full-time student and I was doing obviously, you know, virtual learning and everything, but I knew that I wasn't really going to be able to graduate because it was like a capstone class that I was going to have to be in San Antonio for. And I knew I wasn't going to be able to do. So I was like, I don't know what's going to happen. When the pandemic happened, everything goes virtual. And the advisors like, hey, we don't know if this is going to be a 2-week thing. You know, this is back when we didn't know what the pandemic was going to be. She's like, the capstone class is online. You should go ahead and do all you got to do. And so I ended up taking an absurd number of classes for a full-time employee working at a high demand role. And I did it. I took public transportation to work. So on the bus to work and on the bus back, I was doing homework, reading, getting things done, and then still, you know, working on some pretty important stuff at work. And I finished. I was able to finish while also leading the COVID response. And in all of that, somebody at work decided they were going to nominate me for this Business Insider thing. And I get on the call with the reporter who was looking to do a little profile, right? Because it was one of those 30 under 40. So I was like, all right, they just need a paragraph. So the PR team at Amazon was like, hey, you can't talk about what we're doing. I was like, well, what do I do? Like, what do I talk about? And so I figured that I would just kind of filibuster the interview by just talking about my story. And I talked about growing up, you know, my experience growing up with the healthcare system and everything, finishing school. And I thought they were just going to pull a couple of little key details. They ended up writing a whole article and they just put my business out in the street thinking like, what the hell am I going to do? And remember, I'm thinking like when I was, you know, working for these health systems that at any point they're going to find out I didn't have a degree and they're going to fire me. I thought Amazon was going to do that. And I realized that it was unwarranted. Like that was a fear that was just irrational. Like they didn't give a shit, right? They didn't care. And, you know, my boss reaches out, she's like, this is an amazing article. Like you should be really proud. And it was at that point in time that I stopped trying to think like what everybody wanted me to do, because I had more people reach out to me that were like, bro, that's my story. Like, dude, like that. And I realized there was just a whole other people, a whole bunch of people in our community that were like not following that conventional path, which again, great for people to follow, but there's a whole bunch of people who might not be able to take that path, and that this path that I was kind of highlighting to people resonated with them.
Yeah.
And so it was a point where I finally realized like I don't need to be what people want me to be. I just need to be who I want to be, and I'm going to do what I need to do. And ultimately, that's what got me to a point where I was at the top of my career at Amazon, doing some really good work. I got promoted right after the COVID project, and I realized that, you know, it was time for something new and to build something new. And so that's
I struggle all the time, man. Ever since I came to this country, I don't think I struggle that much in my country. I think in my country they like me. You know, here they don't, right? In my country, like, everybody was like, you're funny, you're crazy, you're great. Like, you know, I don't know. I was kind of maybe not normal, but not abnormal. You know what I mean? But I didn't get pushback. I was like more like celebrated, like as being one of the guys, one of the friends, you know. I came here and all I do here is just get in trouble. You talk too much, you react too much, you're too emotional, you're like, no, you're too intense, you're too impatient, you're too rude, you're too mean, you're too this, it's like whatever it is, it's always that statement of like be yourself. Like for example, in one of my conferences that I ran at Drift, I spoke to about 5,000 attendees. It was the first time my business partner David was like, okay, you can speak at the conference because I'm not like a great speaker, public speaker. So that he hires me a speech coach, to prepare me for this like 5,000 keynote that I was doing. And the whole time I'm like, how are you going to make me sound? Teach me how to walk across stage. I want to be like those tech talk guys in this. And I'm just like, how could I sound like them? Hold my hands in my pocket and just pontificate. And then she's like, Elias, I'm here to help you just write down the story that you want to come across. Really? I'm not here to tell you how to speak. You are authentic and you speak different. You speak as who you are. And that's what most people that are speakers cannot ever do. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, so like what I want to be. And so like, I just get this now, this lesson over and over and over.
Yeah.
Be who I am, because that's what makes me, and that's what has made me here, brought me to this place. Right. And so it's like, every time I try to be somebody else or code switch, I don't do well. Right.
Yeah.
Or I get in trouble or I don't make anybody happy. So I think that this is something that people need to listen to. Right.
And I think it's a superpower, man. Like it's a superpower to be able to like tie your personal story, you know, your experiences to what it is that we do, right? And whether it's at work or, you know, with family, whatever it is, like that's one of the things I tell people on our team today is that if you get asked to, you know, go speak on a panel, don't go try to, you know, just educate people on the things that we already know. And like same talking point, you know, there's all these buzzwords that people use and I was like, start with your story. Like, just start with your story, because nobody can debate you on who you are, right? And at the end of the day, you know, we're in the business of serving humans, right? People. They don't care about, you know, technology or this, you know, this thing or that thing. Like, they care about the connection that we bring and the trust that we're able to build. And if people recognize that, you know, we come from the same place and we have similar stories, that's powerful. And certainly a superpower that I feel like not enough, especially founders at the earliest stages, take advantage of.
But just to contradict you, right? I think I have you here. I'm hearing your story. Do tell us what you're doing, because that is part of your story. That's the beauty of it, right? And your company is your story, right? And it's the current culmination of your life. And like, what do you want to do? I want to learn more about what's, you know, happening with health here. What's the issue? Are you helping everybody? Helping, you know, tell us a little bit about that too, before we lose the
time. Yeah. So you brought up a really good point earlier on around how zip codes kind of influence a lot of our lives. Zip codes also influence, you know, our life expectancy. And when you tie that back to just like the role that healthcare plays in our lives, you know, I recognize, especially when I was working at Amazon, that we were building some really good tools to make healthcare more accessible. But it was for people that weren't really quite the people in our community, right? And this was kind of the story for my career. You know, I had helped build a really successful lab testing company. You know, we sold tests online for $200. My parents would never buy that test. Amazon Care, you know, initially was for our corporate employees. You know, my brother, my sister would never have access to this amazing service that I thought was doing great work around just the patient experience. And so in 2021, I left, raised some venture capital to start Socalo Health, which was really built on the idea of improving the primary care experience for the Latino community. And it wasn't enough just to build a tool or a platform that gave people access to, you know, doctor's visits. I thought that was important. But what was, I think what's missing is that in healthcare today, healthcare is very transactional, right? Especially in our underserved communities. You know, I grew up going to a community clinic, that was sort of built for capacity, not for convenience. And, you know, you were lucky to have a couple minutes with a doctor after a few hours waiting in the waiting room. And it's very transactional. You walk in, you tell them, you know, what's bothering you, and if it's necessary, you get a prescription. And no one asks you if you can afford it. No one asks you if you have a ride. No one asks you anything about just the big picture, the whole picture. And I realized that in order for us to really drive outcomes, like, we were going to have to build just a new way to access healthcare. Yeah. And then also considering that a lot of the things that impact the Latino community, right? Diabetes, hypertension, all these things are reversible, and they're reversible with good access to primary care. Like, that's the thing that we really need to make sure people have access to. And so we built Socalo Health, to basically provide, virtual access to primary care, doctors that are, Latinos, that are bilingual, that can connect with our patients. But the thing that we do a little differently is that we also hire community health workers or promotoras de salud that serve as the navigators in this equation. So we put them at the center of our model because they're from the neighborhood that our patients are from. And the moment that we start to, you know, serve patients in a specific community, we hire community health workers from that community with the intent that they are the familiar face. And these are local folks. These are not necessarily virtual. That can help you not only connect with your care team, but also help you identify social good services that you may qualify for. The one example I like to tell people is that growing up, you know, there was a couple of times parents had to make a decision, you know, the trade-off between filling a prescription or paying the light bill. And I didn't want any patients to have to do that today. And so with our community health workers, it's not just, here's a prescription, good luck, go fill it. It's like, hey, can we help you fill it? What can you afford? And if someone doesn't fill it, you know, we ask questions and through this, we're able to help people find services that maybe help offset the cost of that prescription. Maybe we know of a service that helps cover utility assistance or something for a couple months. And that's where we address this more holistically.
I love that. It just sounds so amazing. And in the day of, in the age, the day of AI, right? Day and age, whatever the saying is. But which is I'm deeply embedded into, right? Mm-hmm. You can't replace, AI can't do what you're doing, right? AI could maybe type the words, it could. But the point is having someone in your neighborhood walking around that wants to help you and understands and sees you walking and going to the grocery store, taking the bus, and knows your children and hears you, sees you come by. I think that that's fantastic. It's kind of like that woman that said to me, Donna, like in college, you're going to be able to graduate. Don't worry. We're going to help you. We're going to be here. Mm-hmm. We need that. You know, I'm just saying like, yep. AI will not do that for a long time, you know? And what's wrong with using AI to find the best programs or the best grants or whatever, right? Or the best discounts. But you still, why not have that human deliver that? You know, to that person that needs to a person that day. You know, maybe just needed someone to say hi to them, you know? I loved it. Tell me what's happening in California. California is always controversial.
So when we started Socola Health, we started initially as a direct-to-consumer company. We wanted to really get out into the community without having to worry about the long sales cycles of working with health plans, because those could sometimes take 18, 24 months. So we stood up quickly our service in California, Texas, and Washington. And, you know, you think that you can do that quickly, and then you quickly realize that every state's different, right? For political reasons, you know, some things are a little bit more accessible than others. But you know, we started to get data from our patients that really demonstrated our ability to engage what we felt were patients that maybe weren't quite so easy to engage for health plans. And we immediately started getting some inbound from health plans in California. And so, last year, we announced, our first partnership with Blue Shield of California. And then, we're about to announce a new partnership here in February with a couple of managed care organizations, which focus on Medi-Cal, they're at the Medicaid program in California, because they recognize that a lot of the Latino communities, especially like in the Northern Central Valley of California, there's just like professional shortage areas. There's not enough doctors to serve these communities. And while there's federally qualified health centers, these safety net clinics that exist in these communities, they're over capacity. They're at capacity. They have 3-month waits in some instances. And the fact that we're virtual and help bring and augment access is really appealing. Not to mention the fact that we provide culturally competent care, our promotoras. These are all things that they know work. They just haven't really had options to bring these types of services to the community. And then in January 1st, just 9 days ago, Medi-Cal is now available to everyone, regardless of their immigration status. So they recognize that they were probably going to have an influx of individuals signing up for Medi-Cal that needed to be served, that again, were probably immigrants from Mexico and other Latin American countries. And so we're certainly in a really strong position, especially in California, to serve these individuals. Again, the use of these promotoras, you know, we are right now in our early stages, a telemedicine company. Digital literacy is always a barrier, but I feel like we're really lucky that our community health workers are there to help kind of close that gap and help people get comfortable on how to use their phones. If they don't have a smartphone, you know, our promotoras have iPads and can help people connect to our doctors. And it's just been a really great experience because these contracts, there's a good amount of resources that are going into services and programs like ours to really help close those gaps. Because at the end of the day, I think what the state recognizes is that if we don't address the needs of this population, costs will get out of control. Yeah. And I think they're just one of the first states here in the country that's really focused on addressing that head on. And we're just very lucky and very fortunate to be in the mix and that our model of care is kind of growing in demand with these health plans.
What's your biggest call to action that you can have for everyone listening here? What do you think?
You know, I think for anybody who, I think recognizing that in our community that we are the navigators of our family. You know, we play an important role. And I think just for people who are out there who have family that depend on them, like healthcare, you know, you've heard the the saying, right? Health is your wealth. And that's true. And we need to take care of our communities, making sure that we're prioritizing our health, you know, scheduling those appointments. That's going to be important. From a business perspective, you know, we've sort of lived through the craziness of the market, right, going up and down. I think we're entering 2024 on a positive note. And so for us, I think the call to action is, you know, support Socorro Health. We have something for everybody, and we continue to build momentum and work with health plans. So if there's anybody out there who has connections to health plans in California, Texas, Washington, definitely reach out, because we can really drive a lot of impact and engagement for the hearts for each Latino communities in these states. And so I think those are the key, you know, for the consumer, prioritize your health, and from a business perspective, you know, need help in growing and getting the Socorro Health message out to the masses.
Yeah. I'm truly in awe and jealous a little bit of you of, you know, with Novia, I started taking on customers and I started taking several nonprofits, and it's trying to shape my future of like, how do I balance and make it sustainable to do for-profit clients and nonprofit clients. But the what you get to do is helping your community. I'm helping the community. I'm helping them in this podcast, and I'm helping a lot of nonprofits. But you get to you combine it in a really smart way, and you get to do it every single day and like impact people. I think you're knocking it out of the park. I'm so proud of you.
Appreciate it.
And I want
appreciate it.
To hear your story. Congrats.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Elias. It's always a pleasure, man, and appreciate your support. Always.
No problem. Thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for listening to the American Dream Podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss a new episode. And share the episode with your friends. Our work isn't done until everyone has equal access to their dreams.